Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 162.
This week on the podcast, Bernie Sanders hates your cable company just as much as you, and that's why he can be president.
And Alan Grayson has a novel idea, running as an actual Democrat in a Democratic primary. Guess who the establishment people are supporting?
Donald Trump reminds us that he's, like, a really smart person. His surge in the polls proves that Republicans are, like, really dumb people.
And Jeb Bush currently has all the money, but don't worry. If you just work longer hours, it'll trickle down. That's worked in history, right?
If Germany can shock doctrine Greece, does this mean that California can shock doctrine Kansas and get rid of Sam Brownback?
Why can Republicans never remember the third thing? Now even Texas border states are suffering from this scourge.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right, that's where it's at.
That's where it's at. We're killing it on Twitter right now, guys.
Is happening. Yeah.
We're Brain Trust deeply Live at Brain Trust Live
on Twitter.
It's
easy.
We're deeply involved in the This Is a Coup hashtag scenario.
Totally.
We love a hashtag like this. A protest hashtag.
I mean,
we're not crazy. So in any case, check us out on Twitter this week because people are actually caring.
We're doing it.
We're doing it.
That's
we're doing
right.
the people's work.
Yeah.
You know
also
what? Doing the people's work?
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders.
Until someone tells us to not lead with a Bernie Sanders story.
We're just going
to
keep going with this.
Yeah.
We're not afraid.
Screw it. No.
We're literally...
We are not.
We're in a situation right now where random people are mentioning Bernie Sanders to us.
That's right.
Out of the blue, not realizing that all we do is talk about Bernie Sanders.
We're also in a situation where I am doing this podcast in a Bernie Sanders for President t-shirt.
That's the kind of situation that Brent and I are in.
That's right. We live...
In this situation.
Yeah.
Brent, by the way, has had this shirt long before Bernie Sanders was running for president.
Come on.
I mean, he's had this planned for a while now.
Yeah.
But in any case, Bernie Sanders was the subject of a YouGov did like a national poll.
Yeah.
Where it kind of like put Bernie Sanders in various scenarios.
Yeah.
And what we discovered is that Bernie Sanders is killing it nationally.
That's right.
He's
fine.
Well
for
above...
For the first time, at least, that we have proof of.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He's well above 20% in the polls.
First time that they've pulled him above 20% in any national polls.
Yep. And it's like, he's not just a little above 20%. He's well above 20%. He's at about 25%.
Right. Well, and Hillary Clinton is at 43%, so that's an 18% lead. Just last week, we were spiraling out of control about the fact that he had cut her lead to 18% in Iowa.
Yeah.
The fact that we can say that he's cut it to that
nationally
is epic, because the national polling is the reason why a lot of people have said that he's had not going to have any chance. Because, like, sure, he's polling well, you know, in Iowa, where the progressives are the people who go out in caucus, and in New Hampshire, which is next door to him. But he has not, up until this very moment, been doing great in national polling.
No, and this poll is the first time that we can really say that his base is bigger than just, like, rich white liberals.
Correct.
In a poll that takes into consideration other candidates or potential candidates, he's polling 25% to her 43%. That's the number that we just quoted to you.
Right.
However, if you drop Joe Biden, who's not running, Jim Webb, Lincoln Chafee, and anyone else out of the race, suddenly his numbers go up to 32%, and suddenly it's 51 to 32
and
in a two-way race.
Too. But what you want is to, obviously, you want to be the second person, obviously.
On Hillary Clinton.
In the two-person
race.
Well,
and also, there's a 7% not sure in that poll, and 9% I would not vote. But here's the other thing. Because a lot of pundits have been arguing that, like, there's no route for him.
Right, that he does well in college towns, he does well with, you know, young people, he does well with old people and veterans and only white people and stuff. And we're starting to see that
this poll breaks things down by age and region and stuff like that.
We're starting to see that that is not factual.
Right. We're first of all seeing that he's polling really well with younger voters. He's down only by 1 point with voters 18 to 29.
Right.
He's down 6 points with voters 30 to 34. The group that he's not really killing it with is where he's down 38 points with voters 45 to 64.
Right.
But he's down 12 points with voters 65 and above.
And
so
older.
So, like, basically anyone who's not
which is a lot
this,
of Democratic
like,
voters,
horrible
by the way.
Like Reagan generation is like into it.
Right.
And, you know, he's being accused of only pulling white voters. But they're starting to show some changes in the polls there as well. Hillary Clinton is still in the lead.
He's not that far behind with Hispanics.
No.
It's 51 to 41.
And with the other category.
And it's also, he's down 79 to 11 with African Americans, which is huge, obviously. But I have seen polls prior to this where it's literally been like 93 to 3.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
no, he's slowly and he's starting developing to be, a following.
I saw an interview with him this week on Al Sharpton's show where they were talking about that. I mean, I he has a good civil rights
record,
you know, to tell. It's just that that group of people just hasn't heard the story yet.
Right.
And
no,
they will as it
when
as
you're
the campaign
the socialist
rolls along.
Senator of Vermont, a state that is one of the right. whitest in the union.
Nobody thinks that you marched on Washington
exactly.
with Martin Luther
and
King
also,
Jr.
Even
but
if they
did.
Do think that, you're just like not ever given an audience of African American voters.
Correct.
Like when has he in his history as a Vermont senator
right.
been speaking to
But he'll
to
have it as this primary goes
voters.
Along.
But he'll have the chance finally, and I think that those numbers will probably start to
They'll
change.
They'll get closer.
Interestingly, in this poll, they show that there's not much of a difference in terms of region. So, you know, a lot of people have been sort of claiming that he's just kind of like a Northeast kind of candidate.
Right.
And that no one really cares about him in the rest of the country. They're showing that his support is pretty much the same right. everywhere.
Well, he talked a lot this week about that specifically, too, because he, and I think rightly, and this is a thing that you and I have talked about a lot on this podcast, but thinks that his message can resonate in really red states. And
yeah.
I wholeheartedly agree, because yes, he's a socialist, but also these people who are even Tea Partiers on some level, they are upset with, you know, the way the government is being run. They are
yeah.
upset with all the money in politics. They're upset with that
they're
they are poor
for
people.
An
they
answer
are, right.
that answers the questions that we all have about why we're all so fucking broke all the time.
Right.
And, like, he has a way of explaining that makes sense.
Right.
And the Tea Party filled a vacuum, you know? It's like when no one's when I wrote my HuffPost piece about this, and I'm still going to go on about it. You know, when there's not information, voters fill the vacuum with gossip.
Right.
And that's sort of like what happened with the Tea Party.
Yep.
There was no information about why we were all so broke and what was happening to the economy.
Right.
So the Tea Party sort of swooped in and filled it with wrong information.
Right. Well,
there was a vacuum.
Right.
He's filling the vacuum with information that is both appealing in the way that the Tea Party information was appealing, but is also fact-based.
Right. Exactly.
That's exciting. Also exciting, though, and this is where I think our rightness is really just over the top.
Yeah.
He's leading Clinton among independents.
Yeah.
Leading.
Yeah.
He's ahead of her among independents. All of that bullshit about how she needs, you know, if we're going to get independent voters to vote Democratic, we're going to need someone like Clinton who's kind of moderate, is all bullshit. Because independent voters are not they're not independent because they're just
they're
in the middle and undecided.
Not, that is what I think that so
That's
often
always
is
been a misconception about independent
total
voters.
Misconception.
They've never just been like swing voters. Like that's not really what independent voters are.
No, they just don't align themselves with a specific party because
they don't find their message in either party.
Right.
It's hard at the moment because both parties are sort of the
so
same.
So similar.
So
exactly.
Where are you going to find,
you
know,
getting
like,
with Hillary Clinton and Jeb
exactly.
Bush right now. And that's why that's why he's resonating right now. And that's why Donald Trump is resonating too. And we'll get to him in a little bit. But I mean, it's for the same reason. I mean, his supporters are pissed off at that party.
Exactly. Right. And they're like, well, if he's pissing off
it's
the Republicans.
Because they're mad that the party is not racist enough.
Right.
But
that's
I mean, it's
a
still
problem.
It's a similar
But it's a similar, yeah,
situation.
It's a similar situation.
Right.
And so I think, you know, the idea that Sanders is not electable, we know a few things about Democratic voters. One is that when Democrats show up, they win.
Right.
So if you have a candidate people are excited about, Democrats win anyway because there's just more Democrats out
there, this
math-wise. But also, he's not at a loss when it comes to these voters that are not decided.
Right. Well, and this is an argument that I think I was telling you earlier in the week that I got into sort of like a random Facebook argument about, you know, Sanders versus Clinton on, you know, like a friend of a friend's Facebook wall, basically.
Right.
But I was like, you know, whatever. But, you know, so many people who were Clinton supporters that I was sort of arguing with here, we're talking specifically about the fact that we need to find someone in the primary who is electable.
Let's lower our standards. Let's start with low standards.
My response to that was, if you look at recent history, has anybody ever heard of President Al Gore? Has anyone ever heard of
President
John Kerry?
Kerry?
If you look at the Republican side, the people who were the most, quote, reasonable candidates and potentially electable, anybody heard of President John McCain?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody ever heard of President Mitt Romney?
Nope.
No, have you ever heard of President Barack Obama?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah, because he was new. He was exciting.
So not only, that is just unequivocally, at least in recent memory, false.
Yeah.
The person, if you set out in your primary to find the person that everybody sort of collectively just kind of like maybe thinks might win, you will lose.
Correct. The Democrats have been doing that again and again.
Yep.
Why do we have a Senator Joni Ernst?
That's right.
That's why. So, but also, we're finding that a lot of the areas where people have been trying to ding Sanders for like not, you know, for not having like major leads are areas where he's at least on par with his national support within these groups. So, you know, Hillary Clinton polls better with women than
right.
he does. surprise. She polls better with everyone than he does because everyone's heard of her and not everyone's heard of him.
Exactly.
But he's very close to his national support, you know, to the numbers that he has nationally with women. It's just that he's not leading among women because right. Hillary Clinton is a person women have heard
right,
of.
Right, exactly.
Like, when we talk about income, he has broad support among every bracket.
Yeah.
You know, this poll shows that he's polling basically the same in every income bracket. So it's not, his message is resonating with everyone who, right. like, cares about the economy.
Because I think the common, you know, thought was that he was, you know,
gonna appeal. Polling
against, polling, probably only polling well in, you know, with rich liberals or, you know, college right. professors
or alternatively, else. Only really or poor people really who don't poor people. Care about taxes getting raised right, exactly. or whatever.
Right.
Here's the kicker, though. His 36% of voters have never even heard of Bernie Sanders. Right.
And he's only down by, what, 17%, yeah. we decided?
And here's what we have often said on the podcast, which is also true, because we're right often. People who are undecided are not undecided because they can't decide if they want to support Hillary Clinton.
Right.
They're undecided because they don't want to support Hillary Clinton and they're not sure what to do with themselves right. yet. Like, he...
Yes, exactly.
He there's So anyone who's undecided in this race... Does not go
not
to Hillary
voting
Clinton.
For Hillary Clinton. All of the Hillary Anyone, people are decided.
Exactly. And not all of the Hillary people are going to be decided when they realize there's options. So
exactly.
He has 36% of the population to gain support with, and she has 0% of the
None
population
of
to gain support
She's
with.
She's lucky to get a few percent
She's
of
not
going to
grow her lead, you know?
No.
He has the potential to grow a lead because, like, a third of the country has never even heard his name before.
Right.
Because he's... A literal random senator from
right.
Vermont.
From Vermont.
Who until just now was calling himself a socialist. And still is calling himself a socialist,
right.
but is like not running as a socialist currently. But I mean, right. This is like, he has so much more room than she does.
Yeah, exactly.
Also.
He's got a real winning strategy
He hates
here.
Your cable company just like you.
Right.
He's just like all of us.
Yeah.
He hates Time Warner.
Yeah, your Time Warner bill's too high.
Oh my
everybody.
God. I pulled this story and then immediately went on a tirade.
I know.
I chatted Time Warner because they're not
were,
open on Sundays and went on like a 30-minute tirade via chat about how angry I am at Time Warner.
Yeah.
I'm angry at Time Warner,
You
guys.
Got into a Twitter battle with him once.
I got into a Twitter battle. I'm going to have to do it again. I'm considering calling the Attorney General.
Oh,
I feel
should.
That I am
totally
being fleeced
should.
In a way that is inappropriate as they were not delivering the service that they were contracted to deliver to
right.
me and they were charging me a lot of money.
Do it.
So I'm on a... Whole Time Warner bent. This
yeah.
would be enough to make me vote Bernie
for him.
Sanders.
I know, right?
Just in and of itself.
This is a very sort of like the rent is too damn high.
Exactly.
sort of.
Well, the Sanders dream team, which right is him, Al Franken, Liz Warren, and then Ed Markey's also on this, sent a letter to the FCC being like, we need to investigate the cable companies. They're basically running monopolies.
Yeah.
And like, they're not responding to consumers. They're not like, this is, they're gouging everyone.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think all Americans can get behind. Because I can't find a single person who loves their cable company.
I mean, I do.
You don't love your cable company. You're happy your cable company
them,
isn't Time Warner.
Correct. That's what it is.
Like, you're tolerating your cable company, but here's the thing. You don't
right.
love your internet company.
No, I don't.
Because that is
Time
Warner.
Warner.
So, like, because
it has to be.
Exactly. So you
yeah.
can't win. Like, nobody loves their cable company. Everyone just hates certain cable companies less than other
less
cable
than
companies.
Their current. Yes.
I would
right.
love to love my cable company or my
right.
internet company. And
yeah.
I don't have that option as an American. And Bernie Sanders is trying to fight to give me that option.
Go, Bernie.
Also, this is just like a great idea when you're running for president.
I know. Totally. Right.
Like,
if you're really looking for a way to, you know, cross all, you know, party boundaries here, it's hatred of cable company.
Hatred of cable companies
yes.
is something all Americans agree on.
That's right.
Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton is about to make her first big economic policy speech
yes,
on Monday.
Today, Monday.
At the New School, oddly. I feel like this is an odd choice of location because that's like a school that was founded by like Jewish socialists. You know, like it's
interesting.
It's a progressive school.
Yeah, she's running against
She's
one of those.
Running against one of those currently. Like, I feel like this is like the school that like someone like Bernie Sanders came from the old country and founded, and now Hillary Clinton's trying to
right.
deliver a speech there to get credibility with those people.
Right.
But I also, you know, she's trying to steal a move out of his playbook and talk
yep.
about the middle class. I also think, you know, when Bernie Sanders talks about the middle class, you don't feel like he's forgotten that there are poor people. He cares sort of broadly about helping everyone, and he, because of that, cares about social welfare.
Yeah.
When Hillary Clinton or another moderate Democrat talks about the middle class, they sound like they only care about the middle class.
Right.
And I have been saying for a while now that I think this is a losing strategy for them. We got, I have... some family that are involved in Democratic politics who got into like a big argument with my mom about this at one point, yeah, because they were sort of like, no, everyone thinks they're middle class. And I was like, everyone in 1980 thought they were middle class. Sure. I get it. Everyone in 2015 thinks they're fucking broke.
That's right. And that's
nobody thinks they're middle class anymore. So when I hear we need to grow the middle class, I don't hear it like it's about me.
Exactly. You know? And that I think is the point. And also, not only is that the point, but of course, you know, dealing with income inequality, of course, deals with growing the middle. I get how they want to grow the middle class. You know, intertwined. But also, the bigger issue is the income inequality, though, because like a country's economy cannot continue.
Income inequality.
Right. Exactly. You can't deal with only putting more people into the middle class
when you're rich richer than God.
Exactly. That's
not a way that math works.
And I think that obviously I get why she's doing this. It makes sense for the reasons that you stated.
This is a very old-line Democratic strategy.
It's an old Democratic strategy. It's also everybody.
It's a failing one at the
everybody,
moment.
I think also too, like talking about like a big middle class, I think takes people mentally back to a time
right,
in the 90s like, when, you know, people have good memories of what was going on in theory with the middle class right. at the time when her husband was the president.
Side note, I recently watched a documentary about the LA or about the 90s where they went on about the LA riots. Guys, my mind was blown. Moving on. I'll talk about that later. Okay. Just like the 90s were not happy, it turns out.
Sure.
I remember them as happy because I was a kid.
Right.
Being a kid is
true.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
that's right.
The 90s.
Yeah.
A lot of shit was going on in the 90s.
But
some bullshit. Anyway, she's stealing talking points from the left. I like how like she's stealing them. Like she
Yeah.
Like I'm mean, like there's well, theft involved.
She's not one of them.
But she's not one of them. So she's been sort of hitting the right points where she's talking about investing in infrastructure. She's talking about giving tax breaks to small businesses. I would say that's probably not the talking point that the left focuses on as much as tax hikes for big businesses.
Sure.
She's talking about paid sick leave, about making sure that women are, you know, fairly treated in the workforce, about childcare services and access to education and wage inequality and all of these things. And I think very tellingly, but also kind of maybe is not the focus that you want in this year with this sort of populist electorate, talking about moving away from sort of like short-term gain capitalism into sort of thinking more long-term about how we invest and how companies operate.
Yeah.
Obviously, we need that as a nation, but this just makes me think more about banks. And I don't want to think more about banks.
Yeah.
She wants to think a lot about banks. I think that this is sort of an old... It was meant to sort of counter... You know, we're going to talk in a little bit about Jeb Bush was having a bad week for quotes, but talked about like basically how we should just aim for 4% growth. We can get 4% growth.
Yeah.
As far as the eye can see.
Which is just a fit, right?
That's what he literally said, that we could get 4% growth as far as the eye can see.
Right.
And she was sort of trying to combat that talking point by being like, we can ask for more.
Right.
We can get more. But I also feel like she doesn't have the sort of, and her white paper is going to come out soon and we're going to find this out, I think, but she doesn't really have the teeth to get into a lot of the things that, you know, we would actually want her to when we talk about things like changing this short-term, the short-term gain economy and that sort of stuff. I just like, Bernie Sanders is already there.
Right. Well, and not only is Bernie Sanders already there, but like, he's...
And
Martin O'Malley,
by the way, is already there too,
right.
Sort of. I mean, he's released some reform proposal that's like really tough on Wall Street in the last week.
And the thing that I think that we're going to learn moving forward is that not only is Bernie Sanders there right now, but he's been there for, you know, 30 years, too. This is not...
He has not
newly come to this, you know, stance that income inequality is bad.
Right.
He's
been there.
He's been there. This is where he lives.
Right. He's always been there.
That's right.
He's been there forever.
Hillary Clinton,
going to have to explain how this new view sort of jibes with her past in as part of the Obama administration, as her, you know, time in the White House. Like, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama were not really progressive on the economy.
Well, and this
they
is
were
what,
not progressive thinkers.
And she is
a part of that establishment. There's just, like, how is she going to be like, I have new ideas as of this year, and I care about them.
And
like,
that's what I have always said. Like, I think the time is now to start calling her a flip-flopper.
Yeah.
Because if or an Etch-a-Sketcher or whatever we
whatever word we're using this cycle. Maybe a new word.
But
we haven't
literally if anyone else was doing what she is doing right now, we would all be being like, what are you talking about, woman? Just in a way that, I mean, we did it in 2012.
Yeah.
Because as soon as Mitt Romney got done with the, you know, his wacko primary, he started moving to the left and everybody was like, wait, what are you talking about?
Exactly.
And she's doing the same thing, but no one has really said, wait, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And I feel like the time is now.
I also think that this showing in the polls for Bernie Sanders is sort of saying it for us. Because
that's true.
I mean, basically,
grassroots people are saying it.
We're getting to the point where we're like, okay, like we can, you know, support Hillary Clinton, I guess, if we want, but why not go to the source?
Right.
We're hearing you, Hillary.
Right.
And that's great.
Well, that's
and
what
we found someone who's actually saying
right,
that.
Right, exactly. Well, and I was talking, you know, I was talking to my, I was talking to my roommate the other day who like made some mention of like, you know, Hillary really moving to the left and like how he thought that was great or whatever. Sort of like, you supported her in 2008.
Yeah, like did
so if you are now super excited that she is moving to the left, A, not only did you fuck it up in 2008.
Right. You really messed that
up. You picked the wrong candidate in 2008. And if your plan now is to be excited that she's moving to the left, then you're still with the wrong candidate.
Right. There's a candidate on the left who's just there waiting for us. Waiting for our votes.
Right.
With 250,000 people donating money to him more than once.
Right.
And just
so if you,
speaking to crowds of 10,000.
If you liked Hillary Clinton in 2008, you should not like her now.
This is not your candidate now. No. Martin O'Malley maybe is your candidate.
And if you do like her now,
Jim Webb might be your candidate.
Then she's also not your candidate.
Exactly. Right. She has no, she shouldn't be anyone's candidate at this moment.
Not a one.
There's not anyone out there who should find that this is an acceptable way to be a candidate.
I agree.
Meanwhile, she got her first big union endorsement today.
Yeah, but it was, I mean,
the fucking like, AFT.
Right, which is run by her, you know,
yeah, her protege, bestie, Randy Weingarten. Right. Randy Weingarten, by the way, I have some beef with her.
Yeah.
She was the head of the UFT before she was the head of the AFT, and my mother was a member of the UFT, and she's also a tiny woman like my mother, so they've periodically gotten to screaming matches on the street and whatnot.
Dreams.
That's, yeah, I like Randy Weingarten in that she was willing to do that. Like,
yeah,
she would get
true.
Into it with my mom on the
right.
street. She wasn't afraid.
Good.
But
yeah.
Randy Weingarten was part of this sort of shift to lawyers running teachers' unions. Sandra Feldman, who ran the union before that, had been a teacher and had been a labor organizer as well. Randy Weingarten was a lawyer.
Well, she's not a teacher.
She's not a teacher. She's a lawyer. I don't even know if she has any classroom experience, but if she does, it's minimal. And so I already sort of have issues with her as a person who's sort of like been positioned as like the lead advocate for teachers.
Right.
Because I don't think that she...
Yeah, she's... How can she be?
And she's an opportunist, and I've always felt that, and I especially felt that when in 2002, she fucking endorsed George Pataki for the UFT, the Republican candidate for governor in New York.
Yeah.
That was an unacceptable... Like, she crossed me then, and I'll never forgive her.
Yeah.
But, I mean, she's someone who has... She's been in sort of Clinton's radar for a while. There's talk about her gunning for Secretary of Education post if Clinton gets elected. And she's a member of the DNC and is, like, a big DNC
person. She was a superdelegate
person.
For Hillary
She was a superdelegate for Hillary in 2008. But I just sort of, like... I don't trust her, and I don't think that she has sort of, like, been the right kind of move. Like, I think the teachers' union has really... lost some credibility in having someone like her in charge, just because I think that it was a sort of irresponsible thing to move away from the idea that a teachers union is for and by teachers.
Right.
And also this business.
Because we
talked last week about how the AFL-CIO was like not sure what to do at all. So
right.
they were just sort of like, Trumka was like, eh, we'll figure it out later.
Right. Not because, so much here.
Not they so just, much here.
Right.
Went shot out right ahead of AFL-CIO. AFL-CIO. Why wait? In any case, speaking of things that are a shame.
I mean,
Jim Webb.
I don't know
what
his game is here.
I don't think he has any game. I think that's the problem with Jim Webb as a candidate for president. He's lacking game. He's
big
not
time.
He's not a great pickup artist when it comes to picking up voters.
He
was on Fox News Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that.
Nope. That's not the place.
And he was being asked questions about national security and then like veered off topic specifically to talk about Trump so that he could criticize Trump, but then turned that into a weird discussion of how all these recent efforts to remove the Confederate flag are divisive and kind of a shame.
And cultural bombs.
Yeah. Like, yeah, he said, don't be throwing these bombs to our cultural groups.
Okay.
Like, Don't be a Confederate flag apologist while you're running in the Democratic primary. There's not Democratic voters for you there.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a group... Like, this is not 1816. Like, the Democratic voters that you're thinking of died a long time ago. Those are Civil War era Democratic voters who were actually Republicans in modern parlance.
That's right.
Like, these are not... This is not... You're in the wrong primary.
That's right. And I sort of... I get what he's trying to do here because he's is sort of trying to pivot away from talking about the flag and making it about the larger sort of like, you know, if we're talking about race, we need to be talking about jobs, we need to be talking about education. But like, that is not a reason
to not sort of take down a racist
taking down
symbol.
The South Carolina flag.
Like, also, he had this like weird digression where he said that he has a close friend who's black. Mm. As we all do.
Everyone does. Everyone has a black friend and everybody has a gay friend.
So true. He said, I was just at his friend said, I was just at the barbershop and I asked the brothers what they thought about this. And they said, here we go again. When are we going to talk about jobs? When are we going to talk about education? When are we going to talk about harmony and bringing people together? That's what inclusive leadership needs to be. I'm sure that was an 100% factual representation of the barbershop conversation.
And you know what?
That his black friend had.
Obviously, here's the response
like,
to that.
Like, obviously we should talk about all those things.
Right. And now we can... Because we don't have to get in a ridiculous argument about the Confederate flag.
Yeah.
And that is what the Confederate flag has always been. It has been up since the 50s. And so anybody who wants to talk about the fact that it's a historical thing.
Can go fuck
it was put up in response
to the Civil Rights Movement.
To the Civil Rights
it's
Movement.
It's an actively racist symbol in the modern definition of
so
racism.
You cannot have, in the South, in places like South Carolina, you cannot have a discussion about jobs when it comes to race. You can't have a discussion about education when it comes to race.
No.
Because it always goes back to just like the
state
inherent racism
is proffering
in the state.
A racist symbol
so now,
as part of its heritage.
So what Jim Webb is missing is that by taking this down is now you can have these discussions.
Yeah. No, it's... And it also, in having the discussion about the flag, it gives us a way to raise a lot of these issues as they pertain to race.
Correct.
Because if we live in a world where we pretend that race isn't a problem and it's okay to have racist symbols up on flagpoles, then we live in a world where people aren't talking about what it really means to have sort of racism as sort of like an inherent part of your culture.
Right.
You know, like,
exactly.
That it's not just like, racism is not just like, I hate black people. It's like, there's a whole systemic element to it that we're just accepting if we allow blatant racist symbolism to just like be everywhere.
Yeah.
We have more on that later because the flag situation, we have a very exciting story. Also, Mississippi is not fucking around with this whole situation.
No.
They're like exhuming dead bodies to get rid of racist symbols.
Oh, no, that was Tennessee.
I mean, Tennessee.
Memphis.
Yeah. Memphis.
Mississippi, whatever.
It's just M words, you know?
Yeah.
No, but anyway, we're going to talk about that in a second. But first, we have the greatest story of the week.
Yeah, this is like, you
this
know,
is it, guys.
Oftentimes the biggest story is not our favorite story.
No, this is our
this
favorite
is,
story.
This is that case this week because this story is too good to be true for so many reasons.
Yeah.
And it's that Alan Grayson is going to run in the Democratic primary in Florida
for Marco Rubio's seat. Dreams. We have Patrick Murphy, idiot head Patrick Murphy, former Republican Patrick Murphy,
running
in that race already. He's the pick of the Democratic establishment. He was registered as a Republican in the past and also donated to Mitt Romney.
Right.
So he's that kind of Democrat,
which
is to say a Florida Democrat, which is to say a Republican.
Yep.
And so in any case, Alan Grayson was getting dinged by the Democratic establishment for jumping into this race. And he was just sort of like, fuck you guys.
Screw you.
Yeah.
And this is the reason that I love this story so much is because, you know, we have talked a lot about, you know, how we would love it if the Democrats would sort of like get into this sort of like
primarying,
you know, and this is a perfect example of a place where I personally think it could work because I understand when we talk about doing that sometimes there's a potential for maybe that to backfire as the Republicans have shown us.
Right.
Okay. But in Florida, we have been, first off, it's a presidential year, so like people are going to come out. There's more Democrats there, as we talked about anyway. But we have run Republicans in Florida
and not
as
won.
Democrats, and we have lost. So
does
why?
Anyone remember Charlie Crist of last year?
The most recent midterm.
Like,
we ran a
guys.
Republican, a former Republican governor, we ran down there. He lost. And it wasn't that close.
No.
Actually. So that's what we're getting with Patrick Murphy here. So, like, why
this
not?
This is not
like,
the kind of
why
candidate
not have Alan Grayson?
That gets Democratic voters to come to the polls. And Alan Grayson has basically said, A, I can
I
raise
am.
A ton of money at the touch of a button.
That's right.
Because he's got a huge fan base because he's bombastic and hilarious.
Yeah, he's crazy.
And so he's got sort of like a larger fan base than just Florida.
Yep.
And on top of that, he was like, why should I be too scared to run against somebody who doesn't represent Democratic values? Democrats are not going to show up for that guy.
Exactly.
Democrats will show up for Alan Grayson. He's exciting.
Yeah.
He'll get you to the polls because you're like, who is this guy? He's crazy.
He's nuts.
Yeah.
Bless his heart.
He's great.
He's so great.
But this is, he's a little behind in fundraising, but he's got a massive fundraising sort of apparatus.
Because he can raise money.
He can raise money online really effectively.
He's one of these sort of like, you know, House Democrats who, like you said, he has a national following. So it's like he, mm-hmm. you know, blasts out an email and asks everybody for,
and has $100,000 that hour. Like, right. So I don't worry about him on the fundraising end. You know, Patrick Murphy has all the money of the establishment.
He is a Democrat. If he does win that primary, the Democrats will
have to jump in.
They will give him money.
Absolutely. But it's like, it's a state where Democrats outnumber Republicans and where we routinely lose seats over dumb nonsense.
Right.
Because we're idiot heads who run Republicans
right.
in Democratic races
That's
all
right.
the time.
Right.
And even the progressives there, like there was some progressive official who was like, what, like, we've got to stop running Republicans in our primaries yes. here. Like, this is the problem.
Right.
Democrats don't vote for Republicans.
Right.
Even if they're called Democrats. That's yes. not how it works.
Yeah.
So, in any case, this is exciting. And this is like going to be like the anti-Joni Ernst election.
Totally.
We're taking the Bruce Braley of this race.
Right.
And we're primarying him. So that way, A, he can see that if he needs to move to the left in order to gain support,
he's got time.
He will have time to do that, and he will do it. And so if he ends up being the candidate, he'll be a better candidate for it.
Right.
And B, maybe we get Alan Grayson in the Senate. That's cool.
Come on.
That would be exciting.
That's it.
I want to see some real theatrics happening. The Senate is so boring.
Right.
Senators, by and large, are like a million years old, and they're all really boring. Ted Cruz is annoying, but he's exciting at least.
Right. Alan Grayson could be
the Ted Cruz of the left,
totally.
But like make more sense.
He would filibuster the shit out of some stuff, I bet.
I'm looking for more filibusters.
He would talking filibuster some stuff.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And
he would say some crazy nonsense.
Totally.
I mean, that's a dream.
Right.
Alan Grayson filibuster would have some great singers reading
Green Eggs and Ham or something. You haven't seen anything yet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so in any case, this is very exciting
that's
news.
That's it.
And that's...
Yeah.
That's all that we could ever want. Also, his thoughts on his candidacy were hilarious. He was on NBC and he said, frankly, one reason why Democrats are willing to crawl over hot coals naked to vote for me is because I'm willing to tell the truth.
That's right.
That's what you get with an Alan Grayson candidacy.
Speaking of people who at least claim to be telling the truth, I'm not certain that's actually what they're doing.
Nope.
But that's what they're truth talking their way to the lead in the GOP primary
yep.
right now.
And Donald Trump.
In
a very shameful showing of Republican polling in North Carolina.
Right. Well, and now nationally.
And now nationally, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's leading nationally in North Carolina. He's in the lead. That's bad news as well. There was a poll in North Carolina that saw him at 16% versus everyone else's 12 and under.
Right.
And that's like, he's at 16%. Jeb and Scott Walker are at 12%.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have three guys circling the drain at 1%.
I mean, come on.
Like, including one guy who almost became the candidate last time.
Yeah, Rick Santorum.
It's just crazy what's happening here. It's, these poll numbers are so sad, by the way. This is just sad, sad, sad.
It's
totally,
yeah.
But also, Trump has a higher favorability rating in North Carolina than in national polls. So that's interesting. His favorability rating, by the way, is not terrible.
Yeah.
That's very concerning. He's got a 55% favorable rating in North Carolina.
Right.
And he's got a big rating, a favorability rating among people who call themselves conservative and young voters,
right.
which is
well,
concerning.
And that's the thing. I mean, look, as batshit crazy as he is, I get it.
Yeah. If you're a Republican
and you're looking for an insane person. This is it,
yeah.
man. You know, I mean, I sort of like hate to compare him to Bernie Sanders because like it sort of seems unfair.
Well, right.
But
and
I get why it's different, on an excitement level. And also sort of like a, you know, Bernie speaks to the base of the party, you know, in the way that sort of a socialist could.
Right.
And Donald Trump speaks to the base of that party
in a way that a racist could. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know,
it's similar in that sense.
They're selling different things.
Right.
But, you know, they're similar results.
Yeah. Also, interestingly, like, in terms of favorability, Jeb does not have it locked up at all. He's in seventh in terms of favorability.
Yeah.
Mike Huckabee and Marco Rubio and Ben Carson are all, like, well ahead of him in terms of favorability. And interestingly, in North Carolina, matched against Hillary Clinton in the general, Huckabee and Walker had the strongest showing.
Interesting.
Huckabee.
Come on.
I said that. That's a real thing that I said. That's a real fact.
Still holding out for Huckabee to
come
back.
Oh my gosh, what a dream.
We predicted it. We needed it to happen. We needed it to happen. We have to be right always.
I would, just from a pure fascination point of view, be so excited if there was a Huckabee Sanders camp, like, race.
Oh,
just
my God,
because
I know.
Mike Huckabee really.
The two, like, the populace from each party.
The populace from each party. Like, it would basically be an election about whether or not we're a majority racist nation. You know, like, or a majority bigoted nation.
Bigoted, yeah, exactly.
Like, that's totally what that election would be about.
That's right. Yeah.
But it would be very interesting, I think.
It would be fascinating.
From a sort of, you know, academic point of view.
Totally.
It'd be a worrying situation from a nation point of view. But it's, you know, you do what you can for entertainment's sake.
Yeah.
But Trump and Chrissy are not actually pulling that well against Hillary. So it's interesting that the Republicans in North Carolina are most excited about Trump, but also won't support him against Hillary.
Against Hillary, yeah.
Like, they're shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Trump is trying to Bernie Sanders his way around in another way, too.
That's right. He's confused about
numbers.
Numbers, right. He's got a numbers problem. But he went to... So, first off, on Friday, he was in Beverly Hills, and he was meeting with families of people who had been killed by immigrants.
Is that a demographic?
Well, there's that whole story this week where that woman got killed up in San Francisco this week by someone who had, like, been arrested, like, three or four times, and, like, San Francisco is, like, one of those, you know, what's it called, the cities
that are
the...
I don't see him talking to the families of people who've been killed by gun violence by American citizens,
no,
which is a much larger group.
No, he's definitely not. But that's, like, his, you know, that's his thing now. I mean, he's,
he's
talking
hating
about...
hating illegal immigrants is his thing.
Right, exactly. So he's got to go talk to, you know,
and
people
he spoke
who have
to a crowd of 4,000.
Right, and then said, what did he say? He goes, he said that was...
This crowd today blows away anything that Bernie Sanders has gotten, which is wrong, because Bernie Sanders spoke to a crowd of 10,000 in Madison and 7,500 in Maine.
Right.
So that's number-wise
kind of,
incorrect.
It's just exciting that he mentioned him by name.
I know. Like those are the two guys that are in the race.
Right?
He's already trying to hate on Bernie Sanders. That's that's exciting.
Yeah.
But he said a lot of hilarious things, such as, they're taking our jobs, they're taking our manufacturing jobs, they're taking our money, they're killing
they're
us.
They're killing us.
Like, a lot of bombastic nonsense. Also, Rince Priebus had to call him on Monday to tell him to tone it down.
But
that's
he's
a bad sign.
But he's not going to.
No.
Like, this is the winning strategy for him right
here.
Because
he's, like, a really smart person.
Right, exactly, yes. He told his supporters that he was, like, a really smart person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
Not an actual really smart person. But
no.
Like
a really smart person. In that he's human, like smart people. He's a breathing human.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He has fake hair.
But ahead of the event, like, even John McCain called his comments offensive, and Jeff Drake, the other Arizona senator, said... Jeff Flake, called his views coarse, ill-informed, and inaccurate. And then when Trump mentioned McCain at this rally,
the crowd booed. Which makes you think that it's not a crowd of people that are electing anyone successfully.
Obviously, right.
But yeah, the people at the event were also...
They were real
treat.
Geniuses, yeah, because there was one woman there who, like, when asked about President Obama, said, he wants to be a dictator. I don't know if he's ever going to leave. My friends all told me he has to because of the First Amendment.
That's the amendment where they tell you when the president has to leave. It's the First Amendment.
Pack it up and
it's a big amendment. It's a long amendment. Freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, term limits for presidents, all included right there in the First
Which
Amendment.
Which we don't have.
We don't have. No, it's like a real... It's a real situation.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It's in other news having to do with Republicans.
Yeah.
Trump is leading in the excitement polls. Jeb Bush is leading in the having all the money polls.
All of the
money. If you're wondering where all the money in the nation
is being sucked up.
It's in Jeb Bush's super PAC.
That's right.
Jeb Bush's campaign raised $11.4 million, which is well under what Bernie Sanders' campaign raised in the last month. His super PAC raised $103 million. Now, here's what's hilarious about this. And by comparison, by the way, Marco Rubio's raised $32 million. Ted Cruz has raised $38 million. Like, he's well in the lead in fundraising.
Oh, yeah.
His super PAC was boasting that they raised that money from 9,900 donors because they were trying to show, like, they had a broad base of support. So they said that about all but 500 of them wrote smaller checks. They defined smaller as $25,000 or under. Right. This is where we remind you that Bernie Sanders' campaign had 250,000 people donate. Their average donation was $33. 99% of them were under like $150 or $100. And they donated 400,000 times.
And this is also where we should remind you that the law for how much money that you can give to a specific candidate or to a party is $2,700.
Correct.
So these people were writing checks for 10 times that amount to
the
super PAC.
And that's the small donors that we're trying to be congratulating.
Small donors, and that is legal under Citizens United. So if you're looking for...
How much money did the 500 that didn't donate that much
give? Right, exactly. So if you're looking for millions, obviously.
I mean, millions, yeah. Literal millions.
So if you're looking for a prime example of why the system that we have now is flawed, look no further than these
numbers. They've given you the in their attempt to show how broad-based their support is.
Right, they've given you proven that this is a shitty plan that we're all
under. This is a terrible plan, and that soft money is still flowing.
Yep.
So that's awesome. Also, $98 million of that is unspent. So he has a war chest right now of $98 million. God. And he's not going to get... That's not, all that money is not going to buy him smarts.
Or happiness
is the problem, though. Like, I mean, I feel like I think about this a lot in terms of how a candidate can sort of like defeat, you know, like Bloomberg outspent many of his rivals, like 50-1.
Sure.
And those races were always really close. And I was always like, I get that the money bought you the race. Like, that's great. Yeah. But like, it didn't buy you smarts.
Nope.
You can't buy smarts. Mitt Romney had all the world's money. Didn't buy him a better brain.
Nope.
Didn't have one. He couldn't find it.
Nope.
It's just like, sometimes all the money in the world doesn't make you not a Bush.
That's wise words.
Wise words from Lila Nordstrom, TM.
Right. Yeah.
Also, here's why.
Right.
This he's proven to us this week, the week that we learned he has $114 million, why all the money in the world is not buying him a better brain.
That's right.
Because he was in like a Q&A with the union leader in New Hampshire. He was talking about tax reform.
Mm-hmm.
This was an interview. It was being live streamed on Periscope.
This is where he brought up his 4% growth as far as the eye can see gem.
Yeah.
But he had a bigger gem
that
was
more
dramatic.
And then we'll break down everything that was crazy about it.
Yeah.
My aspiration for the country, and I believe we can achieve it, is 4% growth as far as the eye can see. Mm-hmm. I would like to know how far that is.
Yeah.
Which means we have to be a lot more productive. Workforce participation has to rise from its all-time modern lows. It means that people need to work longer hours and through their productivity gain more income for their family. That's the only way we're going to get out of this rut that we're in.
That's right.
You just got to work harder, guys.
You just got to work harder.
You got to work longer hours.
Right. This much like his brother talked about, like when he was asked by that woman who was working like 17 jobs, when he said that was a uniquely American story.
It is a uniquely American story because Americans work longer hours than any other industrialized nation.
Exactly. That's where Jeb Bush, that's where the misstep was here.
We're already working more hours than everyone else on
Earth. That's
right. Having the right to work more hours is not really what we're looking for. Having the ability to make a living working our hours is what we need.
Bingo.
Somehow everyone else in the civilized world
is
accomplishing this.
Less and
is working
less
and
poor.
Making more and having healthcare and doing all the things that humans need to do to survive.
Right.
We're the only people that can't. His campaign argues that he was referencing underemployed part-time workers. But because A, he didn't make that clear, and B, that's not... When you compare how many people are working more than 40 hours a week and how many people are underemployed, you don't have comparable numbers.
No.
Most, like, Americans, I think, on average, are working 47 hours a week, and I think nearly 4 in 10 work at least 50 hours a week. 40% of full-time employees work more than 50 hours a week.
That's insane.
Those are 2014 numbers. There are 6.5 million people who are underemployed, who are working part-time involuntarily.
Right.
That, sure, is terrible. Those people should have full-time jobs. But also, you should be able to make a living working 40 hours a week. You shouldn't have to have more than 40 hours a week in your life to work.
Yeah.
And Jeb Bush, of all people, a man who has $98 million just sitting in a bank account so that he can squander it on being an idiot in an election, is not the person that I want to hear telling me that I need the right to work more hours.
Nope.
No one wants the right to work more hours. I want the right to make more money.
Correct.
I don't want anyone to tell me to work more hours. Nobody wants to work more hours. I don't even want to work the number of hours I currently work.
Yeah.
I want to work 0 hours.
Right.
Like, somewhere there has to be a happy medium.
There are some people who are underemployed that would probably like to be working more hours.
Sure.
And
but that's not what he says in that quote.
That's not what he says. And also, those jobs aren't necessarily out there either. No. So it's not,
right.
You know,
I think they're not going to be out there if we give more money to the rich.
Right. So many people who are underemployed or just plain old unemployed, the right loves to make look like the fucking villain for not having a job. Yeah. And they don't have the option.
And also the right likes to pretend that by giving tax breaks to corporations, they're creating opportunities for those people. And they're not.
They're not.
They're not creating those opportunities at all. Because once you're already super rich, you don't need more money.
Yeah.
You have all the money. It's sitting in a war chest. It's $98 million that's sitting in a war chest.
Yeah.
Currently not being spent on anything useful to the economy.
Right.
That's what you have when you give more money to rich people.
That's right.
When you give money to poor people, they spend it because they need to.
Right.
And that is a stimulus to the economy. That's how math works.
Right.
I don't believe in the economy, but
no.
I know basic economic principles nonetheless.
Right.
Also, this is not the first time he's made similar comments like this. He's been trying to vilify the Democrats for degrading the value of work and for robbing people of incentives to work. We have all the incentives that we need to work. We have incentives to work way too much. We have incentives that are borderline exploitive.
Yeah.
Like,
well, we're trying to live.
We're trying to live and eat. That's an incentive.
The main incentives.
Yeah. And this is going to, I think, I mean, we're going to talk about this. Something similar when we talk about the Greece debt situation as well. Because this is sort of a big week for this conversation.
Yeah.
And it's like what it means to be fiscally responsible and what it means to have the right priorities when it comes to the economy.
Right.
But currently, I would say that Jeb Bush doesn't have them.
No, I would agree. And even Ted Cruz doesn't think he has them. Right. Because he said... He issued a statement and he said, "It would seem to me that Governor Bush would want to avoid the kind of comments that led voters to believe that Governor Romney was out of touch with the economic struggles that many Americans are facing."
And we'd agree, absolutely Ted Cruz. Right.
This is exactly what this comment reminds
us back to the 47%.
Although Mitt Romney thought that he was saying it in private to people, whereas Jeb Bush said it voluntarily to a freaking editorial board.
That was on Periscope. He said it to live internet.
Right, exactly. He knew the cameras were there.
He knew the cameras were there, and he didn't care.
Didn't care.
$98 million. Can't buy you smarts.
Nope. That's right.
Also, Scott Walker, accidentally announced his campaign on Twitter.
So good. He literally sent out a tweet. It was like, "Scott Walker's in. Are you?" And it was at Friday at 5 o'clock, which is the news dump hour.
Right.
By the time that it came, press time, which was, an hour later, it had only had 8 favorites and 23 retweets on Twitter,
sad.
Which is, totally sad. And everybody sort of thought that he had done it accidentally because he was
he's
supposed to be announcing tomorrow.
He's supposed to announce on Monday, and he's supposed to announce in time for a news cycle to pick it up.
Right, exactly.
Instead of the news dump time where we don't talk about it.
Politico even was and quoting the person from Politico said that he announced in what appeared to be an unintentional tweet on Friday.
And then they erased the tweet.
Right. The tweet's not on his. Yeah. You can see the tweet, but it's not live on his Twitter timeline or whatever the hell it is. Basically,
poor Scott Walker.
Or Twitter.
All the money in the world can't buy you smarts.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Can't buy you Twitter.
Right.
Twitter knowledge.
Right. If 98
Twittering
million,
is not.
If 98 million can't do it, then whatever.
Then the amount anemic that amount that Scott Walker currently has also not doing the trick.
Yeah, and he's proven that. All the money from the Cokes in the world.
Right.
He's been...
Doesn't buy you a brain.
No.
Can't buy you smarts.
No.
South Carolina.
We got
finally took down the Confederate flag.
They did it. Bree Newsom took it down once. And
for the second time,
South
Carolina's flag has been removed.
This time it's down for real.
That's right.
It's no longer locked to the flagpole.
Exactly.
Right? Wasn't it locked
to it was taken to a state military museum. Yeah, it was padlocked to the flagpole.
Yeah.
It's going to be exhibited now as a historical relic.
That's right.
Yesterday was the day that the legislature passed the bill ordering it down. So they kind of did it right away. They immediately were like, all right, let's get rid of this. But it was a weird scene. People were crying.
Right.
People were crying, but also
like all of the supporters of it, there were more supporters than people who were crying, which was great. But supporters of it coming down. But they sang, na 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 na. It was a very sort of sports kind of you were at a basketball game or something like that. It was the Confederate flag had fouled out of the game.
That's sort of what it did.
That's what happened. But also,
Democrats in Congress this week pushed a resolution to call for its removal from U.S. Capitol grounds.
Right, and there was a huge shouting match basically in the House of Representatives because they got talking about it, and then it was Nancy Pelosi who sort of brought this thing up or whatever, and then there was a British House of Parliament style screaming match in the House, which is
we need to have more of those.
Obviously.
The British really know what's up when it comes to governing.
Totally.
Because they'll shout each other. They stomp.
Yeah.
I want to get to a point where we not only are able to shout, but like we can have like stomping to try to stop people from talking by like making, you know, stomping loudly.
I
agree.
Well, and I think that too many people think shouting at each other is a bad thing.
I know. Well, it's like, you know, you I think and I we have talk about this a lot.
Yes.
When we talk about talking about politics not being a bad thing. You know, we say this in our thing about how to not lose the next election, where we say like, one of the things that we have to agree as a nation is it's not rude to talk about politics.
No.
It's not rude to disagree.
It's not rude to talk about politics.
It's important.
And it's not rude to debate each other either. I mean, like, I think so many people...
It's really important to do.
I think so many people take it, like, as a personal affront, like, when you get into an argument with them. But, like, you know, and you and I have... You and I love to sort of, like... I would get in a screaming match with anyone. And when I say screaming match, I mean an actual
like
screaming
physical,
match.
Like, the kind
but
where you
like,
scream.
I would have... As soon as it was over...
I feel fine.
I would carry on, you know... being friends with them
yeah.
or doing whatever.
No.
But, like, I would feel like that would have been healthy for all of Earth.
Totally.
For that
well,
argument to have
this
happened.
This is, like, I think about this a lot because there was one... I had one great moment where I converted a Republican in, like, real time. I, like, watched it all happen. It was during the Bush v. Gore election year. And I was, like... I had a friend who was a Republican. We were in Greece at the time. We were voting absentee. It was a very weird situation.
Yeah.
And I just, like, slowly wore her down. But it was because... we were able to get into honest conversations about politics.
Right.
And there was a moment where I was like, oh, you're a Republican because you're pro-life. You don't have to get an abortion, so don't worry about it. And then she was like, oh. Like no one had ever
yeah.
said it to her that way.
Right.
And it made sense to her because she was actually like a socialist,
right.
basically.
And you didn't have to lose your friendship over this.
We didn't have to lose our friendship over it. She just cared a lot about babies because she cared a lot about everyone. And so that was
right.
her. And
well,
I was like, that's fine.
God
that's,
bless her.
Right. That's a reason, you know, if... It's like the way that I feel like at least the Catholic Church is consistent. They don't stand for capital punishment and they don't stand for abortion.
Yeah.
I see consistency in that. I see that there's more angles to that, you know, in my own, you know, sort of my own perspective, there's more ways to look at those, you know, those issues. But like, I at least see consistency there and I don't mind it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was, it was like she cared so much about people that she was worried about the babies. And I was like, okay, we can talk about this. But only because we were willing to honestly talk about it.
Right.
And then at the end of the day, she realized she was voting against her own interests repeatedly.
Yeah.
Like, that, but without the conversation.
Couldn't have gotten there.
You couldn't have gotten there.
Yeah.
It's not rude to talk about politics, guys.
I
it's important.
Agree.
It's also important to make sure that your friends that don't agree with you vote, just because when they're invested, they're more likely to pay attention.
Right.
And people who are paying attention vote Democratic.
Voted Democratic, exactly.
So.
There it is.
Meanwhile.
Staying in South Carolina.
Yeah. You know whose background check system failed miserably when it comes to guns?
Yeah, Dylan Roof. The guy who had a gun that he bought.
You know who was not supposed to be sold a gun
yeah, Dylan
in South
Roof.
Carolina? Dylan Roof.
Yeah, because
the man who shot people in South Carolina with a gun that he
drug
bought.
Drug charges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not allowed
so,
to do that.
Currently, we have a lot of issues, even though we've spent
a
gazillion
quadrillion,
dollars.
Trillion.
Yeah.
That's a number.
That's
dollars.
A number. I'm trying to figure out how to be able to work this background check system, because we do sort of have one-ish.
Right.
But... the problem is that it just doesn't work.
It doesn't
because
work that well.
We don't have a good system for all of the different, you know, parts and pieces of our law enforcement to be able to speak to each other.
Yeah.
Whether it's police departments or the FBI in this case, as it is. Because what happened is he went in to buy a gun. And what happens is, at that time, they have to send in they have to ding the FBI
right.
to see if he is... or ping
but
them
this is
to
what
be able
happens.
To,
if the FBI
right.
doesn't get back to them,
within,
they can just, within 3 days,
within
they can just
days,
sell the gun.
He can sell the, they can sell the gun on the fourth day.
So the
day.
FBI got dinged and then just never responded.
Right.
And so
and
on the fourth
even,
day, he was able to buy the gun.
And they were even looking into it. Like,
yeah.
they knew when they got, it was like on the second day,
mm-hmm.
and they put in some requests to like local police departments, and then all of the pieces just sort of like never
it's,
got put
it's
together.
It's so crazy, because even if we had like some basic common sense protections, so many of these people that commit these mass shootings have a track record of doing disturbing things that would indicate
right.
that we shouldn't give them guns.
Totally.
Like, this is, it's not just Columbine kids who are depressed but are
no.
teenagers and are go to their parents' arsenal and
right.
steal a ton of, like, semi-automatic weaponry and shoot up their school. A lot of the time these shootings happen with people who shouldn't have had guns in the first place.
Right.
And it seems like if we're a nation that thinks everyone should be able to have guns, we should still be a nation that can figure out how to make sure those people don't have the means
right.
with which to kill innocent people.
And I think that this could be so easily solved. The answer to this is that you never need a gun this fast. No. By the way. And so what you do here, obviously, is you wait until the FBI gets back to you. There shouldn't
there's
be
no
a waiting
emergency
period.
Gun
there's,
situation.
No, right, exactly. Buying a 45 caliber pistol, there's no emergency situation for
it. No.
So, and that is the thing. A lot of the major gun retailers, like places like Walmart, don't, if they don't hear back from the FBI in 3 days, they will not sell the gun on the fourth day because they assume that if they haven't heard back from the FBI
someone's
at that point,
into things.
Then there's some fucking shit amiss.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, when you have
rando
small
gun dealer.
Retailers who are just trying to, like, sell their products, which on some level you can understand.
Sure.
Like, they are happy to sell the gun on the fourth day.
Yeah.
And that's what happened here.
Yeah.
So, it's so simple. We should be able to fix this. I mean, you know, you and I want all the guns gone, but that's not going to happen.
I would at
soon.
Least like the guns this, gone from the crazy people.
Right. This could be dealt with
so
simply. I mean, it just, and 100% of the country would agree with you, except maybe some of these smaller gun
retailers.
Sellers. That's
you
it.
Know what? That's not the demographic we need to impress
no,
when we're making policy about guns.
No. Even the people who would want to be buying those guns, I bet a large majority of would feel like that was okay.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you're wanting to, most people who are wanting to buy a gun, in theory, should be able to have it. Now, I would say you shouldn't be able to have
right.
it because you're still probably going to shoot somebody with it.
Right.
But I mean,
you're buying a gun,
you know
you're trying
I mean?
To kill somebody.
You're not necessarily, the majority of the people who are trying to buy those guns aren't at the time crazy.
Right. Right.
Is
but if
I'm
we
saying.
Have at least a way of knowing not to sell them to crazy people, we're ahead of the game a
That's
little
it.
Bit.
We've at least...
We shouldn't be that far behind the game, is
Correct.
The problem. The game
right.
is just selling guns to non-crazy people. That's already a problem.
Right.
Because non-crazy people live near crazy people sometimes. And also, it doesn't take being crazy to accidentally kill someone with a gun.
Sure doesn't.
It just takes having the gun in the room.
Bingo.
So, that's already its own issue. But more than that, it's even in the interest of non-crazy people
just
to not have crazy people have guns.
Totally. Just don't give them to the crazy people.
Yeah, and that's so simple.
Simple,
so
guys.
Easy. Meanwhile, Memphis, as we said, is not fucking around when it comes to removing racist symbolism from their
no.
city.
Really getting
they
down to business.
They are getting down to business.
Yeah.
They had this Confederate general and former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan.
That's right.
Buried in the city in like a sort of city park.
Yep. And there was like a statue of
yeah,
him.
Yeah, it was
like
a,
on a horse and a.
It was like a monument to a Confederate general and Grand Wizard of the KKK.
Right. Also, hang on a second. Grand Wizard.
So hilarious every time I say it.
The best.
The best.
Okay, carry on.
Moving on. Yeah, it's like the, I imagine the KKK like being like Harry Potter.
I was going to say. It's all.
They're at Hogwarts together in their in their dumb capes and like.
If they didn't stand for what they stood for, you'd almost want to be a part of it.
Sounds fun. In any case. Memphis is exhuming his body and moving it to a
moving into a
cemetery.
Different cemetery. And they're exhuming his wife, too, so
yeah.
they can move the both of them.
It's they're, like, they were just like, you know what? Fuck this.
This
we're
this
done with this.
No longer.
This is not helpful
this
to anyone.
Any longer. Nobody can say that we didn't
I mean, this is a
it.
Man who got wealthy with the slave trade, gained yeah. name recognition because he was in the Confederate Army, and then in 1868 became the
he
Grand
the
Wizard
first,
of the KKK.
I think.
Yeah.
Wasn't he the first one?
The first Grand Wizard
yeah.
of the KKK. So, an accomplished guy, but not accomplished in the ways that you want a person to be accomplished. Don't put
not
a statue up for that guy.
Nope.
But I love it. They were just like, fuck it, exhume him.
This is...
He
yeah.
should not be buried here.
Nope.
We don't want to... He's moving to a private cemetery.
I love that
have,
they couldn't, like, just move, like, the monument.
I know. They were like, no, get his body out of the ground.
Just do it all.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about this
Leave
ever
no
again.
Body unturned.
Exactly. So that's hilarious and
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
Here's what's not hilarious or awesome.
No.
Germany is fucking trying to shock doctrine Greece.
They're totally trying. And Greece, upsettingly, is potentially going to go along with
yeah,
it.
Well,
after all of their people were like, fuck, no, we're not going to go
yeah.
along with this. Like,
I know.
Why
They're
have-
being bullied.
They're totally being bullied.
It's
but like
so
also,
insane.
It's so annoying.
Basically, all the nations of the Euro got together to discuss what it would take to get a bailout package together for Greece.
Right.
And what they decided it would take was severe austerity measures of the like... that have not worked in Greece in the past. The
no.
kind that caused this issue with Greece in the first place.
Or anywhere.
Or anywhere in any of the nations in the whole world.
Right.
There's not... I challenge you to find a nation where austerity measures
it's
have
a,
done
just,
anything helpful
have,
to anyone.
We have disproven austerity measures.
And this is crazy because they their economy... is linked to Greece's. It's like states there now. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
This is
well,
like
that's
if,
what I heard.
I mean, we're talking about like, what if California decided fuck Kansas And yeah. we were just like, never mind, we're not going to give them aid anymore. You know, Kansas receives more in federal funding than they pay out.
Right.
What if California was just like, fuck you guys?
Yeah.
That doesn't do us any good, because having Kansas exist as a third world nation doesn't help us, because we're in the same nation as Kansas, and right. their economy is linked to ours. Right. That's why the U.S. is organized this way.
Right.
It makes sense, even as much as I hate that we're giving money to idiots. It makes right. sense to organize your economy that way, because the reason to live in a society is ultimately because the greater good is good for everyone.
Right.
And I feel like Germany is so out of line here, right. because it is not the other nations of the euro that are pushing this.
No.
France was like, we want to work something out. We want to keep Greece in the euro. We want to keep, you know, everything stable.
And Germany is like the asshole of the European Union anyway. Yeah. It's like, so... And where Germany,
as we've said before, can go fuck themselves.
Right, where do they get off?
Where do they get off? You know yeah. who gave them money after World War II and didn't get it back?
Yeah.
Greece.
Greece.
Like...
Yeah.
I just, like, it blows my mind that... And we're, you know, we said we're sort of, like, into the this is a coup hashtag at the moment, because that is trending worldwide, and that's exciting.
Yeah.
Because people are really upset about what's happening here. Yeah. And rightfully so. The draft statement that's coming out of this meeting is calling for the Greek parliament to, like, very quickly approve tax and pension reform measures that are going to reduce the deficit, i.e. cut, you know, they're going to raise taxes and cut pensions. Right. So no one's going to have the money to pay the taxes.
And most of the sales tax... Most of the sales tax increase is regressive, too. It's a sales tax
exactly.
increase, so it's going to, you know, disproportionately
affect the poor people. We're talking about a nation where 50% of the youth is unemployed.
Right. And what are these people who are getting screwed on their pension supposed to do?
Exactly. How are they supposed to eat?
Yeah.
By the way, they're having problems eating in Greece right now. I don't know if you noticed. But also, they're telling Greece to privatize $56 billion worth of assets. That never has worked in any nation on earth.
No.
Privatizing your assets means that services become more expensive for everyone. It makes it harder for everyone to live. It makes it harder for the government to make sure that everyone has access to services. These are not things that work.
We have proven the way to be able to do this, to lift countries out of situations like this, is to lift the entire nation up, to lift all of the people in the nation up.
You know what
and
happens
the way
in a
to not do
privatizing
that.
Situation like this? German companies go in and buy up everything, and then they make the money.
Right. And you can't...
The money leaves Greece immediately.
Right. And you can't... It leaves Greece immediately.
And you can't save an economy with all the money leaving.
No, you can't do that. And you also can't save the economy when you're fucking over the people who live in the economy.
Exactly.
Which is what these measures
This is where
go
I think it goes back to reminding everyone that the economy is a fake construct. It's a thing that we control. We can decide how we want the economy to exist.
Yeah.
The economy is here so that we have a way of, like, bartering services, basically. Trading goods and services.
Yeah.
That's what it's for. The economy is not here to teach us a lesson. It's not here to show Greek people that they're lazy. It's not here for any of that. It's the reason that the economy exists is because it was a convenient way for us to kind of figure out how to disperse the goods that we have in such a large economy, you know?
Totally.
And so, you know, we're talking about the Greek people, the Greek people basically having Germany tell them that, A, the things that your leaders decided don't matter.
Right.
You have elected...
The things that you voted on
in a referendum don't matter. And also that the reason that we exist in a society as a whole doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, like this is... Paul Krugman actually has a really strong... thing about the this is a
he's
coup.
Got a great
he's,
quote. Yeah.
He's pissed about what's happening here. As anyone should be. You know, Angela Merkel said something that I'm like gritting my teeth over, where she said the most important currency has been lost, and that is trust.
Yeah,
I want to talk to Germany about what it is to lose trust.
You're telling us about
Germany,
trust?
Germany, like, I know that they've gone through great pains to make us forget about that horrible era in German history,
right.
and I get that, but they are still the German people that were German at that time. This is still an outgrowth of that culture. This is tyranny of a different kind.
Right.
And it shouldn't be accepted from Germany.
Well, and it's like you and I were talking earlier, too. I said, you know, the reason that Germany is sort of like the one who is sort of being able to do this is because for a while when the world's economy was, you know, in the shitter, Germany was the only country that could sort of help Greece.
You know,
and sort of they were upholding the EU. And exactly. Tell us why.
Why? Because we forgave huge amounts of debt after World War II.
Totally.
We put money
we
into
did.
Their economy.
Greece did.
We
gave them a bunch of money.
The rest of the Allies did. We gave them a bunch of money, and they don't have a military.
They don't have a military.
And why don't they have a military? Because we were like, you can't have a military. And this is why.
Right.
Because they're fucking assholes.
Right, exactly. But like, so they, if you want to talk about trust, the only reason that Germany is able to be the person who is making, or the country who is making these decisions right now anyway, is
because we gave them the money to be the stability in the region.
And
the reason we needed them to be stable, by the way, is so that they wouldn't commit another genocide.
Exactly.
That is why you need every country to be stable.
Exactly.
Countries that are stable don't commit genocides. Unstable countries commit genocide. The vacuum that Hitler walked into was an unstable country with out of control inflation and an economy that was in the shitter.
Totally.
And then everyone panicked and they were like, we have to blame somebody.
Right.
We'll blame the Jews.
The Jews.
That's what happened there. And it was being driven by corporate interests, and it was being driven by all the same private moneyed nonsense that is driving this, except that they have not realized from their own history, because they won't talk about their own history, that nobody gains anything if Greece falls apart completely.
No.
And Greece is going to fall apart completely if they accept this package. And if they fall apart completely because they didn't accept this package, at least they don't owe us anything. They're not stuck in this trend.
At least they can, at that point, figure out how to regrow themselves.
Exactly. But, I mean, this keeping them stuck like this doesn't do Germany any good. It does Germany short-term a lot of good. But also, I feel like, here's a bold statement, but I'm going to say it.
Please.
The United States has been involved in wars, right? We've had a civil war here.
Yep.
It was in the 1860s.
Yep.
And it was not a good situation.
No.
And that was bad. But the United States in general, because we have a system where we make sure that money is pretty evenly dispersed, doesn't generally get into actual combat issues that often. You know, Californians are not like people in Kansas. We are not like people in Mississippi.
Yeah.
We're a very distinct cultural groups.
Yeah.
People in New York have nothing in common with people in Texas in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
We, in many ways, don't even speak the same language.
Right.
However, we have decided that the common good here is important, and that unifying ourselves as a nation is important.
Yeah.
And because of that, since that Civil War, we have not had states going to war with each other. You know, like,
right.
We have states that try to declare war on the federal government, but we don't have states going to war with each other. And that is because we make sure that there's at least a modicum of, like, decency in terms of how we treat every state.
Yeah.
This, you know, they're trying in Germany to kind of, like, or they're trying in Europe to kind of create a similar republic-style situation.
Right.
Where they have sovereignty, like our states have, but they're cooperating in the economy. And in order to do that, you need to forgive your idiot cousins and make sure that they stay stable so that you stay stable. Because the thing that Europe can't say that we can say is in the last 100 years, they have gone to war with each other. And why did they go to war? Because Germans are fucking assholes when it comes to this kind of thing.
That's right.
They're know-it-all assholes.
Yeah.
They're proving it again. We thought because they have a great standard of living there and they have great policies when it comes to people taking time off when they have kids and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We had forgotten that they're a bunch of know-it-all assholes.
Right.
That is what they're proving here. And they don't have the moral authority to do that.
No, they don't.
And I don't care if they think Greek people are lazy. I think that people in Mississippi are being stupid when they elect stupid leadership and then they have terrible budget shortfalls and they can't figure out what to do. I think the people of Kansas are idiots for electing Sam Brownback. But you know
they
what?
Did it.
I don't want them to actually suffer in terms of like falling into third world style disrepair.
No.
I want them to learn a lesson by telling them that they're idiots and being like, you guys are idiots.
Right.
You should
that
know
wrong.
That. You did that wrong. But I don't want people in Kansas to starve.
No.
I have no intention of making anyone in any state that I find idiocy
you would
everywhere
like the, you would like their
starve.
People to be able to retire?
I would absolutely like that for every person in America, including people in states that I think are stupid.
Right.
And that is how it has to be if you want to live in a republic-style economy.
They don't give a fuck.
Germany doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Germany should be the one taken out of the euro.
Boom.
They're talking about, by the way, having like a temporary removal from the euro.
Oh, yeah. To, like, let them go back to
the drachma.
You know, the drachma, yeah.
I don't know if this is true or not, but I recall when I was in Greece, because I did a semester of college in Greece, talking to people about how much more expensive everything got when they went on the euro.
Oh, it was.
And
yeah.
I'm sort of like, what if
maybe
they did just go back on the drachma?
Yeah.
And I know that it would be unstable and it would be scary.
But the German... The,
but
the,
I almost
the Greek
see...
people would not...
The Greek people
care.
Are spunky, by the way, guys.
Was,
this is another thing. The Greek people aren't just going to be like, meh. This is a spunky group of people. They don't fuck around there. They riot there. So
right.
I'm a little worried about that situation. But also, like, what if they did that? And what if those other countries that are in this situation started doing that too? What does that do to the euro? That doesn't help the euro.
Mm-hmm.
If the euro is just a common currency between Germany and Greece, then, like, who the fuck cares about the euro?
No one.
That's, like,
Germany
why bother? Yeah. Like,
yeah.
That... But, like, in any case,
Yeah.
I'm furious, as you might imagine. And I'm fascinated by what's going on.
Yeah.
And I love Greece for being Greece.
Yeah.
Never change. The Greek people are not having this. No, like, they're furious about what's going on here. And they're not afraid to... Well, they're basically calling... They're calling for their prime minister to leave the negotiations. Because they're kind of like... this, and that's why this is a coup is trending. Because this is a coup.
Yeah, it is.
That's... When you tell someone that their elected leadership can't enact the policies that they democratically decided should be enacted, then you are committing a coup.
That's right. More international news.
Yeah, we're going to have an Iran deal finally.
Right, today. Monday.
Yeah, Monday. Today, the day the podcast comes out.
That's right.
It has been a rocky road.
It has. They've missed every deadline at least once.
Right.
Along the way.
A not surprising strategy.
Yeah.
It's
a very American
thing. It's a very American style thing to do.
There are other countries involved. I have a feeling it's probably just like a general country
problem. It's a human thing to do.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But so... we apparently are finally getting there, though. It's the reason we sound optimistic is because the foreign ministers of Russia and China are arriving in Vienna, so it sounds like things are about to happen.
Yeah.
So, in any case, there's still a few nuts and bolts to work out. There were things that were pushed to the back burner in the interest of getting, like, sort of the major issues dealt with that are now kind of coming to light that have to do with, like, how long some of these restrictions are going to last. And, like, you know, also Iran is sort of like, if you are going to make all of these, you know, if you're going to make all these rules, like, you have to stop describing our nuclear program as illegal in the actual language of the thing. So there are some restrictions on that, you know, some disagreements, I mean, on that.
Semantics.
It also sounds like Tehran is going to go on hating America.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, the thing,
We haven't won their hearts and minds.
We have not. And they, exactly.
Also, the press hilariously just keeps calling us arrogant. They say, like, arrogant something or other. Like, every headline has the word arrogant in it, which is hilarious.
But, yeah, I mean, the Iranian people don't want this deal.
No.
Because they think that we're just being bullies, which is sort of what we are. But, I mean,
also,
we can just argue whether it's appropriate that we're being bullies or not. Many people, and potentially myself, would say
agree that that's okay when it comes to nuclear armaments.
With Iran, but, you know... As an Iranian, you can
see the
conflict here.
Screw you.
I mean, it's like,
this is tyranny.
Who the fuck are you?
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, we're the Germany to their Greece in this situation on a, you know, obviously
on a different level.
But I mean, like...
But in certain ways, we have been sanctioning them for a long time.
Exactly. So, you know, if you are a person living in Iran, you know,
I see what you're up to. Yeah.
Right.
On the other side, though... they do sound like they might still be willing to work with us on some of these Islamic militant issues. And that's really what we need. We're never going to be, like, best friends with Iran.
No.
And that's fine. Sometimes you don't need to be best friends with people that you have nothing
in
common with.
You just don't... you just have to be friendly enough with them that they don't want to nuclear bomb you.
Exactly.
That's
what diplomacy
is.
That's
like a low bar, I feel like.
It's a very low bar.
Right?
You know who I feel like is not aiming to be that friendly with them? Netanyahu.
Nope.
Israel is fucking this up big time.
Yeah.
They're just, like, causing trouble right now. They're just, like, saying crazy things in the press about how terrible this is. And it's sort of like, if anyone's interest is at heart here, it's theirs.
Yeah.
Creating some, like, stability and peace in that region really only benefits them.
Totally. And
I get why they don't want Iran to have any nuclear weapons, but I also don't think that they live in reality a lot of the time.
But also, the other reason why it does make sense for Iran to make those deals with us, just in terms of dealing with Islamic militants, is, you know, ISIS will not care about, you know, taking over Iran either.
I mean, that's a threat to everyone in the region.
Their whole point, you know,
is to take over everywhere.
Their existence is to take over
their plans
anywhere
are to literally take over everywhere that Muslims exist.
So it behooves Iran
to cooperate on that. And we just need to have enough of a relationship with them to do that.
Right.
You know, like, that's really what we need. And I think we'll have that. It sounds like, I mean, this has been, I think, a very promising thing just in that we're talking to Iran.
I agree.
Because all of our not talking to Iran didn't accomplish much.
Nothing.
Less than nothing.
And if this falls apart, then where are we at? We're just back to them making a nuclear weapon and telling
us
to
go fuck
ourselves.
Exactly. So this is, I think, promising in general.
Right. All of the people who have been, like, so mad that this is going on, it's sort of like, well, the alternative is nothing. And by that alternative being nothing, then you're basically leaving them with a bomb.
With that said, this might not pass Congress.
Bingo.
So we might be those people.
We're
idiots sometimes.
That's right. Mitch
McConnell was sort of like,
faith.
Good luck, guys.
Yep.
It's going to be
a tough road. That's right.
Like, mm-hmm. What also might be a tough road is that there's talk of more shutdowns. This fall, we're going to have to, again, figure out a way to keep the government open. That's and right. We might, again, not figure that out.
Right. And the Republicans have both
chambers. Yeah.
So if this is, they can't get it done, it's going to be, I mean, they were already blamed the first time, but
we're going into an election year.
Election year.
This is terrible timing.
Some of them are sitting senators, too.
Yeah. No, I know.
I mean, and one of them is the person who shut down the government single-handedly the last time
this happened. So. Bad news bears if they don't just, like, quietly deal with this. I think they will, probably.
I think they probably will,
because what else are they going
to
do?
Right. Like, there's no way for them to not be blamed for this. There was a chance in hell the last time that if they played their cards right, they might be able to blame it on the Democrats because we were running the Senate
at the time.
But they didn't succeed. But this time is sort of like, you've got no shot here, people.
You gotta play ball now.
You'll have to own this. There will be no way to not own this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, speaking of idiotic moves.
Oh my god. Seriously. Republicans. They can never remember the third thing. I know.
They only have room in their head for two things.
I know.
They can't remember the first two correctly in this case either.
I know. There was one of my favorite episodes of 30 Rock was the one where, I don't even remember what happened in the episode, but there was that quote where it was, where Liz Lemon was like, never go with a hippie to a second location.
Yes, right.
And I always feel like, whenever I'm talking about the third thing with the Republicans, never go with a Republican to the third thing. Like, you're not going to get there.
You won't get there.
You can't.
Yeah. We have Mary Fallon, who's the governor of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
She's talking about whether some statues of the Ten Commandments are going to have to come down from the Capitol.
The Supreme Court this week said that they had to come down because that's
a thing. That's the separation of church and state for you guys.
Exactly. Yeah.
But in the process of saying that she doesn't think they should come down, she gave like a really wacky civics lesson that was also incorrect.
Right.
She said, you know, there are three branches of government.
Tell us.
You have the Supreme Court, the legislative branch, and the people.
Oh.
The people and their ability to vote.
Ah, yes.
Here's some
things. Two of those three things are
almost
wrong.
Correct. Yeah, right. Two are almost correct and not... Only one of them is fully correct.
Correct. There you go.
The Supreme Court is not a branch of government.
It's not. The legislative is, so she's sort of almost got there.
She got the legislative
right. Right.
The judicial branch is the one she's referring to when she says Supreme Court. But it's not just the Supreme Court. It's all the courts.
Right, exactly.
The people are not the third branch of government. Because they are the legislative branch.
Right.
That's what the legislative branch is supposed to be.
Do you want to know what the third branch is?
It's the one that she belongs to.
Yeah, it's the executive branch. She runs that
she
branch.
She runs the executive branch of Oklahoma. Not familiar with its existence.
She doesn't know. Exactly.
She's never heard of it.
Right. So I would say, then, let's get rid of her.
Yeah, right. Maybe we don't have to listen to her already.
If she has no reason for existence.
Right. If she doesn't know about her own existence, what are we paying her for?
Well, she's a
fucking idiot. Have a job.
No, she doesn't.
In her own version of the government.
That's right. What an idiot.
Oh, man. Oklahoma. Guys.
No, but Texas border state.
Texas border state. The three-thing issue is spreading.
It's spreading. Yeah, exactly. Spreading. It started in Texas.
Things could get dicey in New Mexico this year. We don't know what's going to happen.
Nope.
Anything could happen.
Yikes.
Meanwhile.
Susana Martinez is no genius.
So true.
So, there you go.
Yeah, and she might be getting a privileged position in the VP slot if that happens.
By the way, this story goes out to Carla Nordstrom. Because on Meet the Press, they talked to Nikki Haley this morning about the flag coming down. And then after the interview with Nikki Haley, all of the panel was just prognosticating about her future on, you know, a national Republican Party ticket.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's happening.
So, there you go.
Yeah, no, I think when she said that, it immediately made so much sense to me that I could never unknow it, you know?
Yeah.
I could never unthink it.
I had not thought of it until that very moment. And even at that very moment, I was like, she's too dumb.
Right.
But here
No one's too dumb, by the way, to be
always,
the VP. She knows.
She's on the forefront.
Yeah, she always knows what's coming. I don't know how she does that. It's creepy. Meanwhile, remember Sweet Cakes by Melissa?
I do.
Yeah, Brent does. Because they were refusing to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple.
For gays. That's right.
Well,
they've been in court for like the last 2 years.
They've been in court for a while.
And the gay couple won the court case, and this cake company now has to pay
$135,000.
Yeah. So what they did was take to GoFundMe.
This is a classic move of stupid people. As we talked about with Dylan Roof's sister
for her sad
last
wedding
week,
that
for
got
her sad wedding
while
that
her
canceled.
Brother was, you know,
murdered
people.
Yeah.
So they went to GoFundMe, and they got up to almost reportedly like almost $100,000.
Yeah.
Now,
but then GoFundMe was like, no.
Wait a minute here. They're like, no, because GoFundMe has a policy, and this policy I think makes solid sense,
yes.
by the way, is that they cannot, you can't use the site to raise money for people who have been found to be in violation of the law, which these people obviously were, because they're raising money, you know,
right.
to pay back a, you know, the money in the court case that they just lost.
Exactly.
So they violated
the law.
They are in violation of the law.
That money is going to a law violator.
Right. So
a hilarious Facebook exchange resulted.
Yes.
They posted on their Facebook page, "Evidently, GoFundMe has shut down our GoFundMe page and will not let us raise any money. Satan's really at work, but I know our God has a plan and wins in the end."
That's right.
So then a commenter left a very insightful message.
Insightful, yes.
"So it was okay for you to refuse service to someone because you didn't agree with how they wanted to use your product, but it's not okay for GoFundMe to do the exact same thing?"
Zing.
Zing.
Yeah.
Bang, boom.
That's right. But
good
point, commenter.
Yeah. Teresa Mitchell.
God.
Satan's at work here.
Really? Satan really wanted them to pay that game.
Satan really hates gay haters, is I think
that's right.
what's going on here. And if that's what Satan hates, Satan's not so bad.
That's right.
I don't have any beef with Satan if that's what he's up to.
No.
So
agreed.
Solid plan, Satan.
Good work, you.
Continue. In any case, P.S. My high school, like, assistant principal's last name was Satin, and it was spelled Satan. So I can only ever think of that.
That's
Mr.
good.
Mr. Satin.
Yeah.
And it was like one day I had an epiphany where I was like,
wait, that's
this
a
man's
Satan.
Last name is Satan. What on earth?
No.
Anyway, side note about Satan.
Yeah.
Side note about things.
That's right.
Next week, I can only imagine we'll have more exciting news about Bernie Sanders.
We're gonna
it only
be
gets better
the burn.
Every moment. We're feeling the burn hardcore.
That's right.
Also, I hope we have some interesting news about Greece and how they didn't take this debt relief package.
Yeah, Greece, if you're listening.
don't take
do
the
it.
Bait.
Come on.
Fuck Germany.
This is a coup.
We will be back with more news next week and more updates about these stories. And until then,
have a good week.
Check us out on Facebook and Twitter.
That's right.
We're tweeting now.
Yeah.
Have a good week. Bye.